You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Sadly, in ancient times as well as today, people seem to pay more attention to what people say about the Bible than what the Bible really says. Case in point are our Christmas stories. Just a heads up for those of you who are sticklers for detail, the popular Christian understanding of the birth of Jesus comes largely from extra-biblical works and traditions imported into the Gospels, and not the Bible itself. Some of the most familiar elements come from a document from which we take our words of wisdom today. It was likely written in the 3rd century and is referred to by scholars as the Proto-Evangelium of James. We don't know who the author was, but it wasn't the same author or authors that wrote the biblical James. This infancy gospel is where we get the idea that Jesus was born close to Mary's arrival in Bethlehem, not in the Gospels, and is why you often see the stable portrayed as a cave, also not in the Gospels. This painting is a good mashup of the Gospels. The scene is in a cave, James, which also is a stable, Luke. Note something else here that gives you pause? Note the two boys. Who are they? Well, they're Joseph's sons. They're not in the Bible, but had to be created in order to account for both Jesus having brothers in the Bible and keeping Mary a perpetual virgin. Voila. In fact, much of the information we claim to know about Joseph and his family, and a lot of the art depicting the story, like Mary riding on a donkey, is not in the Bible. It's drawn from Gospels that didn't make the cut. There are no details in our biblical stories about Joseph's age or children, but they're here in this reading. And while we're not reading that passage today, Joseph finds a midwife in Bethlehem, and according to tradition, she was a wonderfully snarky and skeptical woman named Salome. When Joseph explains the situation to her, she says, "Uh-huh, really?" Anyway, just this week, Israeli archaeologists have announced new discoveries at an ancient tomb southwest of Jerusalem that has traditionally been associated with this Hebrew midwife, Salome. There's a Byzantine-era chapel on the site where Salome was venerated for centuries. So, we're reading a passage from the infancy gospel of James today because I think it's a real shame that the gospel of Thomas, the infancy gospel of Thomas, and today's book are not included in our official tradition. A shame because it's a rich and beautiful telling from which we get a number of images that we take for granted as a part of the Christmas story. So let's hear these words that are often unheard, but which nevertheless have contributed so much to our tradition.
Our words of wisdom are from the infancy gospel of James, chapter 17, verses 10 and 11, and chapter 18, verses 1 and 2. When they came to the middle of the journey, Mary said to him,
"Joseph, take me off the donkey. The child is pushing from within me to let him come out."
So he took her off the donkey, and he said to her,
"Where will I take you and shelter you in your awkwardness? This area is a desert."
And he found a cave and led her there and stationed his sons to watch her while he went to find a Hebrew midwife in the land of Bethlehem. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
It's Christmas Sunday, so it must be time for another amazing Steve Burt story. Steve was a seminary professor and pastor with a gift for storytelling, who now writes full-time. On previous Christmas Sundays, we've heard his Thumb Island Elephant story, Perfect, Just Perfect, The Blessing Bell, and One Main Christmas. All are from his wonderful little collection, A Christmas Dozen. This year, Steve takes us to an unlikely setting for a Christmas story, the World War II campaign that has come to be known as the Battle of the Bulge, the last major German offensive on the Western Front, and a brutal test of the courage and resolve of the American soldiers who fought there. Having had the privilege of knowing several veterans of this battle and heard their stories, including one who, like the soldier in our story, became separated from his unit, I was especially drawn to this story and how, especially in the most desperate situations, we have opportunities to express what really matters in life. Here's Christmas 1944. The soldier's hollow eyes scanned the farmyard in the dusk. A broken chimney bowed over the smoking ruins like a mourner. Before the artillery shelling, a tidy white farmhouse had graced the countryside. Now there lay only rubble and charred timbers. Heck of a Christmas Eve. Not sure if I'm in Belgium, France, or Luxembourg, mumbled the soldier. Can't very well send Christmas cards if I don't know the return address. A splintered pony cart caught his eye. One of the shells had exploded nearby and overturned it. He stared at it a moment and muttered, "Somehow I'd have imagined it more scenic." The barn was still standing, perhaps because there had been little wind, and perhaps because the house and barn were 100 yards apart, no spark had jumped the gap. On the path from the house to the barn lay a hound, its chest blown open, innards spilling out. A dead chicken lay nearby. Nothing moved. "Just another casualty," the soldier said, picking up the dead chicken by its feet and holding it at arm's length, "in a long list of casualties. Some Christmas, all right. Not even a Christmas goose this year." He tossed the chicken carcass aside. Something moved. Barn door. He dropped to the ground, finger on trigger, and waited for an enemy soldier to step out. He held his breath, his heart pounding fast and hard in his ears. A kitten. A white kitten. As it pushed past the door, the hollow-eyed soldier felt his muscles relax and his breath rush out. "No," he whispered, tensing again. "Could still be someone inside." His finger tightened on the trigger again, and he thought what to do. It was dusk. He'd been separated from his outfit. It was Christmas Eve in a war zone. He was bone tired, and he wasn't even sure what country he was in. He needed a place to sleep, and it was either the barn or the woods, but he wasn't sure the barn was empty. When nothing moved for 5 minutes, he changed his position, worked around to the back of the barn, didn't trust the front. Too risky. Behind the barn, he discovered a fenced stock pen with a low door leading inside. He entered cautiously, rifle barrel first. The barn was dark, empty. The animals had either escaped, been eaten, or like the hound and the chicken, been killed in the shelling. The stalls were empty except for the loose straw scattered for bedding. No hay. The Allied advance had turned the hayfields into battlefields. The soldier looked into the rafters. Two identical lofts one on each end of the barn. "Heck of a Christmas Eve," he repeated under his breath, then climbed the ladder to one of the lofts. Once up, he moved to a corner and pulled off his pack. "Where's Santa with my presents tonight?" he said sarcastically. "I guess he and God stay clear of the combat zone." He sat dazed a moment, stunned by the possibility of what he had uttered. This war and what he had seen and experienced had presented him with his times of most faith and least faith. Finally, he took off his helmet, set it aside, and began pulling things from his pack. A can of beans, powdered milk, 2 chocolate bars, the beautiful knitted shawl he had bought in a French village, hoping to send it home to his mother in Maine. In truth, though, he didn't want to send it. He preferred to hold on to it, praying that he might get home alive to place it around her neck himself. He opened the beans and he ate them along with one of the chocolate bars and lay on the loose straw and fell asleep. A noise woke him up and his eyes flew open. Cautiously, silently, he sat up, rifle ready. No idea how long he'd slept. Not sure if it was night or day. A dim light. Was it dawn? After a moment, his eyes adjusted and he saw that it was a lantern light. He inched to the edge of the loft to peer down. A young woman, hardly more than a child herself, sat on a bed of straw, nursing a baby. The child cooed as it sucked, and the mother sang a lullaby. No father or traveling companion in sight. The hollow-eyed soldier kept silent. After a while, the young mother lay back on the straw and lifted the child above her head. The baby gurgled and giggled each time she lowered it to her face and kissed its belly. Once she held it overhead, and it drooled on her. But she simply laughed and kept on. She sat up and kissed its bottom, then lay the baby across her lap and kissed its bottom and stroked its back and hair. The child flailed its arms and legs without crying, but didn't fall asleep. When the baby tried to turn over and look up, the young mother stood, placing one hand behind the baby's head and another under its bottom. Then the two of them began to dance, swirling and dipping around the dirt floor together. The mother's long skirt kicked up tiny straw and dust whirlwinds, and the white kitten swiped at her with its paws. The breathless young mother slowed to a waltz, and within minutes, the baby fell asleep. She walked to one of the horse stalls, spread a white linen napkin on the straw, and laid the sleeping baby on it. Then she covered it with a second linen napkin, bowed her head, and silently prayed. Another movement from the other loft. The soldier's hollow eyes searched the darkness there and met another pair of hollow eyes. The enemy. Each had been intent on the mother and child. Now they were intent on each other. For a long time, neither moved. Neither raised a weapon. Then, as if by design, both looked down again on the mother bowed over her sleeping child. The enemy moved first, and the hollow-eyed soldier watched as his counterpart cautiously slung the rifle over his shoulder and began the climb down from the loft. The sound of boots on the ladder startled the mother, and she looked up, afraid. But when the soldier smiled and nodded respectfully, she relaxed and acknowledged his nod. He knelt near her, reached a hand into his pack, and drew out a carved wooden box. When he lifted its lid, a waltz began. The mother smiled as he held out the music box to her, not a word spoken. And after a long moment, the enemy soldier stood, slipped on his pack again, and disappeared into the night. In the loft, the hollow-eyed soldier waited to see if his enemy would return. When nothing happened after 10 minutes, he swung his feet onto the ladder and climbed down quietly while the young mother watched. As his boots touched the floor, he turned and faced her, unsure what to do next. His tentativeness gave way, and he slipped off his pack to kneel where his enemy had knelt. One hand held the pack, and the other slid inside it, drawing out the powdered milk and the remaining candy bar. He placed them beside his enemy's music box. The mother nodded, smiled, and the soldier rose to leave. But at the door, he stopped. He looked back to the light, seemed uncertain for a moment, then retraced his steps and knelt once more where his enemy had knelt. The music box had run down. The waltz had stopped. So he picked it up. He turned it over in his calloused hands. Solid, yet delicate, the work of a master, he could see. The music box was indeed a fine gift. He wound it, opened the lid, and the waltz began again. The mother smiled, and when she saw the hollow-eyed soldier looking down toward her sleeping infant, she drew back the linen napkin to reveal its peaceful face. Tears streamed down the soldier's cheeks. The young mother bowed her head, eyes closed softly. As she did, he closed his eyes and bowed his head. It was only a moment, but a long moment in the midst of a long war. But when she looked up, the hollow-eyed soldier was gone. And where he had knelt sat the music box playing its waltz. Draped across its open lid lay a beautiful knitted shawl. In our infancy Gospel of James passage today, we're reminded of Mary and Joseph's desperate circumstances, essentially that of a refugee family seeking shelter in a time of distress, and, as Joseph puts it so quaintly, a time of awkwardness. Because of war, climate change, and economic crises, the UN has estimated earlier this year that there are currently 27 million refugees and over 100 million displaced people worldwide. My mind boggles. But I don't give up hope. Like the soldiers in our story today, each of us have opportunities to give of ourselves something unique. And while it might not change the world, it might just change the universe for one person or family. So in our in-person celebration today, we'll be sending people home with knitted shawls, handmade by our prayer shawl ministry, not for themselves, but as a resource, inspired by our story today, to seek out someone for whom such a gift would make a difference. In the end, our call as followers of Jesus is to do our part in making the world a better place, even when we're wrestling with life and death issues of our own. So here's to not being so distracted by our own challenges or ambitions that we lose sight of those whom we can help along the way. May the coming year be one of putting love first in all we do. Merry Christmas.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.